This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Right, so we have had almost 24 hours to digest the State of the Nation address. That was a full 90 minutes late once we got that sideshow of the hooligans in red overalls out the way. No rabbits out of the hat, it appears. More emphasis on clear actions, hopefully, in the budget later this month. There were some positives. I was reading a JP Morgan note this morning. They seem to see the positives in energy. For example, the municipalities are now allowed to buy from IPPs. No solution on the Eskom debt, though. A spectrum auction by the end of the year. And talk on SOEs by being financially sustainable and a plan for SAA out later this month. So we'll probably see more detail out on the budget. Well, with your view on the sonar, we've got Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer, Galileo Asset Managers, and Raymond Parsons, a professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University. Chaps, kick us off. Warwick, the first reading of this seems to be fairly positive for the market, but JP Morgan said in its note this morning it was still underweight SA Inc. stocks, despite that positivity.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously understandable under the circumstances that at the end of the day, I mean, prices of shares are driven by earnings, and earnings are not going to follow through while we've got this kind of appalling GDP growth at the moment. And I mean, it's going to be pretty sticky for the next 3 years, as we know. I mean, forecasts are 3 years to go no better than 1.5 and probably worse. So I'm afraid that's a pretty valid point of view there. I think there are a few things to look forward to in the sonar. One of that is the issue of business generating its own power. I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, Eskom simply doesn't have capacity, financial and probably not technical either anyway. So government actually needs a bit of bailing out here regardless. And business, of course, wants to do it because they're tired of the power interruptions all the time.
Raymond, on that point, the president belabored the issue of social compacting. And I think for me, he was almost speaking directly to some of his critics who have been supporters of his, but who have become impatient with the slow pace of the reform agenda and said, well, he's spending too much time as a president on social compacting, on becoming a conciliator rather than a reformer. But within that message of social compacting, he said government can't do this alone. That seemed to be a big invitation to business to step into the breach and to partner even more with government.
Oh, hi, Michael. Look, I think we've got to say, I think this was one of the better sonar speeches. It pressed most of the right buttons, some of which we have touched upon and will touch upon. There was a recognition that we're in a grave and serious situation. I think importantly, there was also a recognition that the government had made mistakes. And so I'm hoping from this, we'll try harder to get more things right the first time round. These mistakes have proved to be extremely expensive for the country. On this issue of the balance between having a social compact, and I must say, I prefer the idea of mini compacts, sectorally orientated, as the case may be, which are more manageable and more achievable than this original idea that there's a big macro socioeconomic compact out to be negotiated. I think that was never going to be feasible. But the issue here must be, yes, of course, this country's serious problems are too big to be only resolved by government or only resolved by business or only resolved by labor. That's absolutely true. And if we can mobilize social compacts in order to get outcomes, that's important. But social compacts and consensus seeking must not be a substitute for leadership. There comes a point where talking and consensus stops and someone has to say, I'm taking a tough decision. And the problem is that to turn this situation around, you're going to have to be unpopular with some people. And I think that's quite an important issue to remember. So the two points I would make, whether we're talking about social compacting, Eskom, the ease of business, all these important issues, I would make three points. The first is, once again, we've got to walk the talk. That is got to be the underlying message, however good the rhetoric is. Secondly, we've got to understand that we want to involve the private sector on a much bigger basis. We want to build confidence and credibility. And thirdly, my advice to the private sector would be, don't only count on the promissory note that was in the sonar. go and rattle the cage and say, you have made these promises, make them happen. Some of them have been given a month, some 3 months, 6 months. Don't come in 6 months and say it hasn't happened. Go and rattle the ministerial door and say, why has this not happened? So I think it's important not to take a passive attitude to what has been promised, but a proactive, assertive attitude that holds the feet of the decision makers to the fire, because what we need is delivery. And that's tremendously important.
Delivery and action. Many people in the build-up this week, Warwick, that I chatted to, said the time for talking about the issues, the diagnosing them, and even prescribing solutions is over. It's time to show concrete progress on key issues. I'm still unsure that I see too much in the way of concrete progress on key issues. And you take Eskom, for example. Last year in the State of the Nation address, it was the number one issue. It was highlighted ad infinitum as one of the biggest key threats and constraints on growth. Yet we haven't seen too much in the way of solutions developed to deal with the debt, firstly, the 450 billion rands worth of debt. We do have the new CEO, and André de Ruyter appears to be getting his hands around some of the thorny issues, but we've yet to see any concrete turnaround plan, and we still don't have any of the plans around the unbundling of Eskom. So once again, identifying the issues, talking about them, but in terms of progress, very little.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly one would hope to see something coming out there that's more concrete. At this stage, it's very much a concept that I'm seeing here. But I think we are further forward than we were before. I think there's a growing national consensus. And as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, at least we had better language coming out of COSATU.
I think what's important now, if we look back on the SONA, it may still be behind the curve, but it's closer to the curve than it was before. And I think the two important points, in fairness to the president, the first has got to be that where the rubber hits the road in even what has been said in the SONA will be the budget. That political arithmetic will decide what investors feel about the future, what business feels about it, and what indeed Moody's feels about it. And the second is, in fairness, there will be the ministerial portfolios. You cannot expect the SONA to address every one of the ministerial portfolios. He's got to say, I've started the 2020 relay race. I've set the broad picture. I'm now handing the baton over to the various ministers. I've set deadlines. I've set directions. I've pressed buttons. I'm now getting them to sign a performance agreement, which is going to be public. So let's hold everyone's feet to the fire at the appropriate level. And let's keep our expectations of what you could concretely expect in a SONA within manageable proportions.
And Raymond, on that, the president acknowledged that we are approaching a fiscal crisis. He did indicate that the Minister of Finance will announce initiatives to reduce public expenditure in the budget, and engagements are being held with Labour. So that must be seen as a positive and a signal that some of those politically unpopular decisions are going to be taken.
Absolutely. And I think where we would expect to see what concrete work in progress has been made will be in the budget. Remember, there are the three major points which were made in the SONA which need to be concretized to a large extent in the political arithmetic of the budget, and also the economic arithmetic of the budget. That is, firstly, inclusive growth. What will the budget do about that? The issue of the state-owned enterprises, you will only get all the numbers on the table in the budget, and we will know whether we're meeting those red lines or not. And then thirdly, are we going to emerge out of all this with a more competitive economy, to which the president referred? If these opportunities, which are lurking in the budget, are to be translated into reality, we're going to have to be competitive enough to exploit them, because we're in a big, bad world, which is extremely competitive and very ruthless. And the important point is that apart from the good things we want from growth and employment and so forth, we want to be able to show that we are mastering these things both internally and externally, because we are more competitive than we've been in the past. And that was another important message that came through in the SONA. But once again, I come back to the point, I think one has to give it a few months, see what the ministers can do, and ensure that they held accountable. Accountability was another cornerstone of the SONAR. Let's see how that gets translated into reality in terms of results produced in terms of the SONAR by specific ministers.
And on that, Raymond, state-owned enterprises, I guess, play a critical role here. And the reference to state-owned enterprises was twofold. And Warwick, you actually picked up on this before you came into studio, the fact that we've spoken about a sovereign wealth fund now. How are we going to fund a sovereign wealth fund? Well, people are not sure we've got the money, and they're probably right, but we don't necessarily have to seed a sovereign wealth fund with financial capital. We've got assets in the form of state-owned entities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the initial response was a bit of hisboo, but sovereign wealth funds are only owned by countries that actually have money, like Kuwait and Norway and so on, and they take a natural resource endowment and say, right, well, we're going to create intergenerational wealth here. But I think what we have is this. I mean, government is not really particularly good at running businesses, as we know. And it's hardly surprising. I mean, a responsible government actually is a service entity, and a business is a profit-optimizing entity, and they're culturally very different anyway. So having these state-owned enterprises that frankly do not have a developmental purposes and are actually just businesses that are in government's portfolio, I mean, there's basically a bit of a clash there. And what can one usefully do with them? The way I see it here is that when you look at businesses like, for example, Foscor or something like the IDC and so on, they don't really have so much of a developmental purpose. Sure, I mean, the IDC has created businesses, and I think it's in many ways the crown jewel in the portfolio now that everything else is, or the big ones all got damaged.
or nicked.
And here's the point. Is you take these good residual assets, and you put them in a portfolio that, first of all, that portfolio then has some capable business-minded management in it, and secondly, it ring fences it away from culturally civil servants' hands, as well as any hands that want to go into the till, as it were. And that, I think, is a viable approach towards a sovereign wealth fund, that you don't seed it with cash because, frankly, we don't have any, but you seed it with assets. Government still has a big asset portfolio, but there is no ways in which this portfolio is really being properly monetized or properly run or properly optimized.
And then get government employees' pension funds investing in developmental SOEs in a sovereign wealth fund to fulfill a dual mandate, perhaps?
Well, I think the important point here, I think, Michael, is that we must give these ideas a good run for their money. You know, the sovereign wealth fund, the idea of a state bank, all of which I think will be expanded on in the budget. I only would caution that we need to be very careful that we don't go from the frying pan into fire, given the track record of how institutions have been hollowed out, captured, and so forth. So they're going to have to be safeguards here, important safeguards, that once you put all your eggs into one basket, that's going to be a very attractive basket. So the important point here is that, yes, let's look at how we can add to the institutional framework in ways that will deploy our resources and our government assets more effectively. But we've got to be absolutely sure that whatever we call it, and it's obviously not a sovereign wealth fund, but let's call it that for the moment, that we safeguard it with the necessary checks and balances, that we learn the lessons of the Zondo Commission, and we build whatever safeguards are needed in re-engineering those institutions that we think will better promote growth and development from the government side.
I'm seeing in these proposals a lot of the thinking of Mariana Mazzucato, who's the economist appointed to the Presidential Advisory Committee. What was there, 17-odd economists on that panel that the president had announced? She's a very well-known developmental economist from the London School of Economics, talking about how you use the state almost as the key seed engine in a venture capital type ecosystem to drive innovation and to drive development. And she cites examples of Silicon Valley being started with a lot of US government seed funding, but allowing the professional managers to get on with doing what they do best. And that goes back to your point earlier, Warwick, is that you're ring-fencing these these good assets in the SOEs and allowing them to grow, and in so doing, giving government more options. Overall, just a rating on the State of the Nation address. Peter Attard Monsalto sent me a note this morning. He said 8 for spin, 6 for content, and I think 2 on execution or deliverables. Well, how would you rate it, Warwick?
Look, I mean, I'm always going to be sort of more hard-nosed than the developmental economists and others, and I think there's been a lot of ground that's had to be prepared. So perhaps his 2 might be a little uncharitable. I would have probably said 3 or 4 myself. And I think round about 6 or 7 on the rest. I mean, the fact is he's laid out what needs to be done, but he has to make sure that he has the cats herded in the right direction. And right now, those cats need a little bit of help on direction finding.
I would just say, yes, I think one could be fair with that sort of comment. I would probably give those marks as a little higher for the reasons I gave, that I didn't expect the SONA to be talking about execution. That's what ministers do. What the SONA has to give is a firm, bold lead to the cabinet that there are new mandates, different mandates, and the bar has been risen, has in fact now been put much higher. And I would also say that when you've reached a fork in the road, as the president has said, of 2020 for our economy and so forth, then you don't listen to only one member of your Economic Advisory Council. You say there are 19 of them. I would like to test what I've said, test how we're going to implement this. What do you as 19 economists think? Am I on the right track? Should I be tweaking some things? I think it's important to use that council as a sounding board for what has either been decided or half decided, but above all, try harder to get more things right the first time around.
Well, I would have given the SONA about a 7 out of 10 because there were no mentions of bullet trains and no mention of the fourth industrial revolution. It was a lot more practical. And to your point, Raymond, it scoped a vision that seems eminently more achievable than perhaps the dream that we saw in the past. Raymond Parsons, professor of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Warwick Lucas of Galileo with your view from the market here on Classic Business.